We've got four verses here. If it sounds unfamiliar, feel free to set out the first until it feels better and then join on in. Like a real treat, search online on YouTube for Joe Carter singing Let the Work That I've Done Speak for Me on the early iteration of Krista Tippett's show, which was then called On Religion. It'll give you shivers. It's lovely.
Pray, speak for me. Let the love that I share speak for me. Let the love that I've shared speak for me. When I come to the end of this road and I lay down my soul, let the life that I live speak for me. Let the prayers that I pray speak for me. Let the love that I share speak for me.
So, the theme for today's worship service is looking back and stepping forward. This is the first of four worship services focused on social justice that we'll be offering throughout the year. And I want to acknowledge the incredible support that the Social Justice Committee has received from the Worship Associates and Josh Davies, from Cindy, and the entire community. To do this work. It reflects the profound and deep desire to actively seek social justice in the larger association of Unitarian Universalist churches, but also the fourth UU community specifically. It's the reason why Evelyn and I have chosen the fourth UU as our home faith community. The theme of today's worship service, again, looking back, stepping forward, we thought it was important to start with a look back. And the importance of looking back is reflected in the Sankofa Project. The quote that I had at the opening, you must look back to reclaim that which is lost in order to move forward, is kind of the slogan of the Sankofa Project. It's a human rights organization originally founded by the great entertainer and civil rights activist Harry Belafonte. And the name Sankofa comes from a symbol of the Akan people of Ghana. The symbol is of a bird with its head turned back, reflecting the importance of looking back to knowledge gained from and throughout history, bringing it into the present and using the knowledge to promote progress. And I think it's important in this time, sometimes it feels like we as a society are forgetting our history. Today we have what is referred to, many people talk about the school to prison pipeline, sometimes the cradle to prison pipeline. It's a system of systematic and structural racism in our schools and criminal justice and economic systems that results in a 40% rate of incarceration of African Americans, when African Americans only make up 12% of the general population. This system operates as if we've forgotten how African slaves, the ancestors of African Americans today, were brought to this country in chains in the first place. At the U.S.-Mexico border, we intern Latino families, men, women, and children, seeking no more or no less than anyone in this room would seek if we were ever faced with circumstances of poverty, violence, and little hope for the future. And we do this as if we forgot that during World War II, we legally, but immorally interned over 100,000 Japanese. Ironically, while we were fighting the atrocities against Jews interned in concentration camps in Europe. Lastly, those same Latinos who were freed from their internments are, along with refugees from around the world, told, "You're not welcome here. And you must fend for yourself with little or no opportunities for life and liberty and much less the pursuit of happiness." As if we've forgotten that from 1838 to 1839, our government forcibly removed 15,000 Cherokee people from their lands east of the Mississippi and marched them west under the harshest conditions, resulting in the deaths of over 4,000 men, women, and children on the Trail of Tears. Looking back is always important. As Cindy reminded us a few weeks ago, we continue to celebrate Christopher Columbus as the great discoverer of America, as if people were not here already before his arrival, and that his arrival did not result in the mass genocide of those people. But today, we're not going to reflect on that history or the legacy of racism and oppression in our society. Instead, today, we're going to reflect on the history of social justice within larger Unitarian Universalist Association and our fourth UU community in particular. So Alan Weger is briefly going to describe social justice in the larger UUA. And Bill Hart, and we were hoping Beth would be here, but she's not. I don't think she's arrived yet. And Eric Brown are going to remind us of all the social justice efforts of our own 4th UU congregation. And then after that look back, we're going to step forward and look at the future of social justice here at the 4th UU and our plans in the Social Justice Committee to continue to engage us all in this very important work.
Morning. So the title of this subsection is Deeds, Not Creeds. And I did a tremendous amount of research. I probably had enough to talk all morning. But I found it really fascinating to look back at the social conditions in the United States in the 1700s that led to the formation of the Unitarians and the Universalists. And I think it's instructive because today we're facing a whole series of crises, including some which Jim alluded to, and especially with what's going on with in Eastern Europe and other places where more authoritarian governments are coming into power, and we have to learn how to cope with this worldwide. So let's take a step back to 1730. The period of 1730 to 1783 was eventful both politically and theologically. Starting with religious revivals known collectively as the First Great Awakening, followed by an escalating conflict between France and England, began a process by which a distinct set of American concerns would come to the forefront. War between France and England was soon followed by a war of independence, in which a philosophy and a theology of loyalty to a king took a backseat to a sense of individual rights and interdependence. During and in the aftermath of these momentous events, the period between 1750 and the early 19th century would also include periods of reflection and consolidation, in which the outlines of the future direction of American society would be formulated. Most notably for UUs, this would include the founding of Universalist congregations in the 1770s, and in much of New England, a gradual decline in the inclinations of congregations and ministers to insist upon adherence to Orthodox Christian creeds, and instead to focus on social structures. This led to a split between traditional Congregationalists and an emerging movement that became known as Unitarianism, which emerged in 1805 with control of the influential Harvard Divinity School. Ministers of this period included preacher and theologian William Ellery Channon, who was a mentor to both John Bartlett, co-founder of both McLean Hospital and the Massachusetts General Hospital, and to Dorothea Dix, who led the national reform of the mental health system, as well as serving as a superintendent of Army nurses during the Civil War. Unitarians and Universalists were leaders in the abolitionist movement and in the creation of formal boards of education, the first of which statewide took place in Massachusetts in 1847 and was led by the Unitarian Horace Mann, a politician who became a founder of American educational theory. Later movements of significance included both the suffrage and the temperance movements. During the period of 1920 to 1960, a series of steps took place that resulted in a merger between Unitarians and Universalists, which was formalized in 1961. Also notable was the creation of the Unitarian Service Committee in 1940, which was formed specifically to assist refugees created by the policies and the expansion of Nazi Germany. Today, this agency is known as the UUSC and maintains a focus on refugee and human rights throughout the world, including the rights of migrant workers in the United States. The UUSC emphasizes direct action and alliances between different aid organizations and groups in various countries. And finally, in the era of our own fourth UU, founded in 1957, contributions were made in the 60s and 70s to the civil rights and the anti-war movements.
Howdy, howdy. I'm going to try to bring back our memory of our own involvement with social action here in the fourth. And we've done a lot, and we're continuing it at the moment. And there's a lot in the past that we haven't continued. Well, these actions, these activities, these involvements seem to fall into four categories. They are the social protests, like rallies and walks. There's volunteerism, there's an outreach, collaboration, such as working with the Standing Rock and the Ramapo Tribe and Black Lives Matter movement. And the fourth one is education consciousness raising, like film series that we've had here before. So to the best of my ability, my memory sometimes is shorter than I want it to be, but I hope I've caught most of what we've been doing. And they start with Fred's Food Pantry. And Judy Shavrin, for example, is the cornerstone, as far as I'm concerned, of that. She's been there every inch of the way. Cooking for the Jan Peak Service. That's down, way down in the Peekskill, almost by the river, or by the railroad tracks. Leslie Brussel Smith, you remember Leslie? She was very much involved with that. So was the youth group at the time that Leslie led the youth group and myself. Gathering books for women for the Bedford Home Women's Facility. Gathering toys and clothes for the Bedford Women's Facility at Christmas. Thank you, sir. It's not scotch, is it? Thank you. Thank you, Bo. I don't know if it'll help or not. The midnight run in our youth group with Leslie again, and that continued with Pam Parker and with Bob Solomon. Standing on the site of Love March in White Plains, which was, I think, last year in the spring, perhaps. The march with Reverend Dawn to D.C. to protest the LGBTQ rights, and the many runs that Gretchen has been involved with, and Ralph has been involved with. In fact, they're not here today because they're out running right now for hunger, the Croton Run for Hunger. They have also ran, especially Gretchen, for Gay Pride March, New York City Women's March, Standing Up for Racial Justice in Westchester, and the Clearwater Festival in Croton. Reverend Karen went to South Dakota, we all remember that, to protest with the Standing Rock Sioux. And I believe she went twice. Our youth group with Leslie Brussel Smith once again participated in the AIDS Walk-a-thon. That was many years ago, but they did it every year for 4 or 5 years in a row. And the AmeriCares Home Rehabilitation Program that this congregation has been involved with in Croton, Freedom Gardens, and Peekskill, that was run, to my memory, by Leslie Hefferman. I'm sorry. Mark Savita, Brian Cole, and myself for many years, maybe as many as five, we pick up breads and pastries from Panera's and run them down to Jan Peake House on late on Sunday nights, right? Yeah. And then there was a painting, a wall mural that was done at the Jan Peake House. As you go up the stairs, we did both sides. That was a fellowship project that was executed by the youth group and myself. We hosted social justice films, which Beth Wugan was definitely involved with, as well as Mara Gregory and our husband, Will Tasman. And recently, Eric Brown has been directly organized with the Arapaho Native American tribes in New Jersey, along with myself and the help of many other people. I'm going to let Eric explain more about that because he's more capable than I. You're on. Yes, please.
Animals, some of the younger the youth did some contributions to animals.
For our youth group?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we also did Black Lives Matter banner. I don't remember that clearly, but I understand that we did do it, yeah. Eric, where'd you go? Yep.
I'm gonna need that. Yeah, you really need them. If you have the whole bottle, that'd be fantastic. I think one of the, thank you, Bill, and Alan, and Bob, I really appreciate that. And Jim, for putting this whole thing together and being a leader in this. One of the things that we discussed in our meetings, which haven't been that many, but it feels like we've been together for quite a while now, is the irony of having a social justice committee in our first presentation being five guys standing around talking about this. But I think I was just thinking, you know, it would be fitting. I know Beth wasn't able to be here, but we really were hoping to draw on her experience and all the work she has done. And Susan has been a part of that group, and Pam Cook is also a part of that group. And, you know, I think one of the things that could be said, probably a joke, maybe a little bit sexist, but that, you know, women are actually out there working and doing things while men are flapping their gums about things. So Alan gave his a title, and when we sent these things into Jim, I didn't have a title, so the title I thought was We Tossed Firewood Off the Back of a Rented Truck. So, but it's about a little bit more than that. As I listen to the history of the community's efforts to ensure equality for all, I can't help but consider the phrases seek the truth in love and help one another. Simply put, that's really all the term social justice really means. We live in an age where referring to each other with respect is snidely called politically correct, and trying to make society a more equitable and welcoming place and perfecting our union is callously spun as a crisis for real Americans. It sometimes feels that even broaching the term social justice as a concept sets one up for ridicule and mislabeling, especially when all we presently seem to cherish is lying in wait for evidence of misstep, hypocrisy, misappropriation, or simple human failing so we can unleash our outrage. And so you'd be fair in asking how that just display those sentences of cynicism and anxiety would even allow for involvement in social justice. Well, I think for me, you could probably blame it on, although it's a cloudy day, the light that consistently floods through the windows. It could be the congregational greeting. It could be the name tags. All of those things could sort of dissipate that cynicism. But I think two other options could be that it's the words of those that affirmation, and it's the sacrifice of so many of my elders and the hardships they endured that bestowed on me a personal responsibility to ensure that those who come after, like my elders did for me, are able to live a less fearful existence than I, and that they'd be seen as a person in full, not just a collection of stereotypes to be overcome. And so when we're confronted with these two short and powerful phrases, the seeking of truth and helping one another, it only seems natural that we look outside ourselves, our own situation, and our own struggles, to join in how we can help one another. In this case, a couple of years ago, I think it was, that we heard from Reverend Karen report on the Dakota Access Pipeline, which could only be at best described as our democracy's latest example of casual indifference toward the indigenous folks who dared to stand in the way of our country's view of manifest destiny, that it led a group of us to look closer to home and start asking ourselves questions like, what does truth look like? What does love look like? And those led to discovery of similar threats to indigenous communities in our own backyard, or more aptly, their backyard. And the actions of a leader, shared concern, willingness to reach beyond this light-soaked room, and most importantly, listening with respect, led us to find a way to honor the spirit of the trees that were so lovingly planted on these grounds decades ago. And in a call to friends and quick action, thank you, Bill, a collection of individuals, each led by their own desire to help, seek, and respect those that are different from them, helped convert the love in the trees felled by disease, and convert that into love that provided the Ramapo camp at Split Rock Sweetwater a measure of warmth last winter. And that day, that collection of friends was Bill, Gretchen, and her friend, Gretchen, who's out running right now, Vincent and his son, Viano, Eric Larrabee and his son, Aiden, Pam and Clark, Brian Cole, Alan, and Josh, who, by the way, unloaded nearly an entire truck of firewood by himself and maybe threw a couple of them directly at my head. Whether it's bad luck that he hit me or just circumstance, we'll never really know. But we'll put a pin in that and save it for another day. That day, we joined the line of respect, honor, and love for a fellow man that is the simplest definition of social justice, in my view. We formed a small strand in the web of life that Minister Stindy has referenced in sermons in the past. The UU strand that connects the efforts of Fanny Barrier Williams in 19th century Chicago to the efforts of our friend Beth Wugan here in Westchester, in the place that we call our spiritual home. That same day, a quasi-legal trip, which I think turned out to be legal thanks to the research of Mark and Eric Larrabee, but again, we'll put a pin in that. That quasi-legal trip to New Jersey to deliver firewood was an act of friendship and support born out of listening, which is arguably the most crucial act of respect and justice. And it helped weave our strand of social justice that connects our past to our future. All the strands are vital. Whether it's pride in knowing your leader represents you well, rolling up your sleeves and throwing firewood off the back of a truck, or making sure that those with their sleeves rolled up won't land in jail doing it, it's these individual efforts, group support, and even caring enough to really listen that makes the difference. And so we seek the truth in love, and we help one another. And that's what social justice looks like.
So our other hope as we were meeting was that we would leave enough time for congregational sharing. Very quickly, I wanted to sort of lay out a few things before we do that, just to lead into the congregational sharing. So the Social Justice Committee has been... Oh! We have another.
On the order of service.
It's 1-7.
Up, there you go.
It's 1-7.
Sorry. Oh, sorry. Oh, okay. Oh, no. So very quick. No, I'm sorry. So yes, we have the hymn, but this is actually part of the service. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things. So I did want to mention this before we go into the congregational share. Sorry. But I'm glad, because there definitely needed to be a switch before that. So quickly, what the Social Justice Committee is looking at doing. There's four things. One is these worship services. So as I mentioned, this is the first of four. And just to give you some sense of what we hope to cover at the future worship services, we hope to do one on communication, how we talk about race and oppression, the words we use and how we approach, how we communicate about it outside, outward facing, but also inward facing, and how we talk about these issues. As Bob talked earlier, the importance of sharing stories and thinking about what we say and the words we use. The other one we plan on doing is on social identity, understanding ourselves, our identity as people of color, as white people, how we identify as a group, and what that means for things like white privilege and white supremacy, and understanding the perspective of people of color. And then we have hopefully a panel on race and oppression, and possibly an interfaith service on social justice. So that's just to give you a few plans. So we have the worship services. The second thing is Alan has offered, and we're going to try to start a social justice calendar. trying to sort of along the lines of not reinventing the wheel, finding what's already going on out there, how we can join other groups and get involved in other activities that are already going on. So that calendar is going to be an integral part of our social justice work. And then the last thing is going to be sort of special projects. And what we mean by that is anyone here as part of this community who decides and thinks about something that needs to be done, that's missing, that's not being done. The idea is going to be anyone here can start a group, can identify a team of people, and that the Social Justice Committee and the larger leadership here at the 4th UU will figure out ways of supporting those projects as we move forward. And then lastly, and this is the part I will leave for congregational share, the question is what else? What else and what more can we do as a faith community to advance social justice? So that's the end of the formal program, and I'll leave that part for the congregational share, and then we'll have